What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp. This is the Fightful Backstage Report. If you're new to the show, we give you about 20-25 minutes of exclusive backstage news from Fightful, maybe some additional details on other stories, and some contract updates, some injury updates, some stats. A little bit of everything on this show, but you're going to get a bunch of stuff that you're only getting here. So let's get right into it. I dropped the Fightful Wrestling Weekly this morning, the Fightful Select Edition, rather. Had a WWE note there that the Street Profits and the Viking Raiders have filmed in Orlando a mini golf competition, which will continue their feud. I don't know if that airs tonight or next week, whatever that may be, but it has been filmed. It will go up. Last week's SmackDown was also heavily edited in post on the commentary side of things, especially in regards to the AJ Styles trade. I've asked for some internal reactions from Raw wrestlers. Have not heard back as of yet on some of those. But we had plenty of news, including a lot from Ring of Honor. Like, I talked to Joe Hendry, and he said that he has embraced the creativity that gained him a lot of attention. If you are like me, then you may have heard of Joe Hendry a few years ago when he was doing those songs in ICW. They carried over to other promotions. And he told me that he didn't want to become the Weird Al of pro wrestling. But then he realized that if he's really good at something like that and it got him attention and it did good for his career, then he should probably embrace it. As a result, he went viral for a McDonald's Oasis themed video, and he stopped showing people the videos before they air in wrestling, saying that he doesn't usually cross the line with any content, and if people get particularly offended by them, they're probably in the wrong business to begin with. He says that the same will apply for him whenever somebody throws it back at him and turns the tables on him and maybe does a song or busts a little joke. So he's prepared for it and knows that it's going to come. Hendry told me that he worked a few dates with Ring of Honor. And one of the things is a lot of companies want other companies to think that you've signed with them because it serves them well, because they don't have to have you under a contract. And that's a free agent effectively off the board as well. But he made it known that he was a free agent and was operating in a free agent and wanted to make sure that was out there. That's why he started the Free Agent Podcast. And he had an offer from Impact Wrestling and a few other places, but he contacted ROH General Manager Greg Gilliland, and they hammered out a deal in about 5 minutes for a deal that wouldn't even go into effect for a couple more months. And originally he said that he did not want to be a tag team wrestler, but the partnership with Dalton Castle just worked out fantastically for him. He said that he gained some promo inspiration between those two from old Tenacious D skits, and said that his original deal with Impact didn't work out because he didn't have a visa at the time, but he likes them, he wishes them well, he thinks that they're doing great. We went into great length about that Impact situation and what he was doing and how it didn't work out, and a lot of people thought that he was there a lot longer than he was because he filmed a lot of stuff in those 4 or 5 dates that he ended up working, or 4 or 5 tapings that he ended up working. So he said that that led a lot of people to think that it lasted a lot longer, and so when it didn't continue, a lot of people thought that this was a much bigger deal than what it really was. But a few months later, he had hammered out that deal with Ring of Honor, and all was good. Hendry told me that he feels that Marty Scurll knows as well as anybody how to get over, especially in today's wrestling environment, and knows how to relay that really well to the roster of Ring of Honor, and is really in touch with fans and has his finger on the pulse. And Hendry feels like that's a valuable thing to have in today's wrestling environment. Joe says it's unfortunate that Marty didn't have much of a chance to execute his vision that he had planned before the pandemic, because that's really put a damper on things. Marty got that new role effectively in January, and they haven't ran any shows since the end of February. So Marty Scurll didn't really get to execute a lot on what he had planned for the upcoming Ring of Honor schedule. And they had some really good stuff. They had past versus present, or future versus past, whatever it was. It was a good looking show. And I'm in the same boat as Hendry. I think that Marty Scurll didn't really have an opportunity to show what he could do. Marty Scurll was just getting the ball rolling on the stuff that he had planned, and that's unfortunate. But that conversation with Hendry is a really good one, and we're going to segue that into basically the way that Ring of Honor has been treating their talent. We've been hearing that they've been going above and beyond to protect their stars during this time off. We've heard from numerous talent that are thrilled with how they've been treated during the pandemic in Ring of Honor. And ROH asked their wrestlers to stay safe and be creative, which we have seen bleed over into the company's YouTube. Now, if you heard me talk about that company's YouTube last year, and hey, far be it for me to tell somebody how to run their YouTube. I've had ours banned and all kinds of stuff, and it could be a lot better, but Ring of Honor has the resources. They've got the tools to where and the video library to make that work. We'll get back to that in a minute. Now, ROH allows its talent to provide anonymous feedback and help via a private channel where they can give advice or give ideas or make complaints or give feedback without the fear of repercussions. That's been put over to me in both public and private conversations, on the record, off the record. It seems like something that has really helped Ring of Honor establish some new stuff and get out there and get ahead of things. Now, if you have noticed Ring of Honor's YouTube taking a big leap in quality, you can credit former Impact employee Dave Hodgson. Now, I know most everybody saw how well Impact's improved over the last couple of years, significantly. And I can tell you that I had conversations with their team as well in the past, and they made it very easy for me to produce content. They made it very easy for me to review things. And Dave Hodgson is a guy that Joe Hendry said that he went to bat for because he was familiar with him from Impact. And he happened to be in between projects, and Ring of Honor brought him in. And it's already paid off. If you take a look at their YouTube, it's already paid off. Outstanding. We were able to gain more information on that closed-door meeting, which Hendry said that he did attend, he did come to. And it happened sometime since August. As Joe Hendry noted, he was there, and that's when he started. And said that there was a podium in the front of the room, and the company allowed anyone who wanted to speak or provide input to do so. I'm going to keep trying to find out more about this meeting to see what we can garner out of it. AEW news, for those asking, the AEW TNT title delays were legit. This was not a reactionary move based on something that they saw on social media. They legitimately were not able to get the championship properly plated. They went to a guy named Ron Edwardson to produce the belt, who is, I've heard, is kind of new, is kind of breaking into the belt-making world. Dave Milliken made the other ones. But there aren't that many places in the States to get the plating properly done, and the COVID-19 issues caused them not to be open. So if you're wondering, oh, was this a reactionary move based on criticism on social media or this and that? No, it wasn't. I got a look at the title before the show, and I thought it was a decoy. I thought there was no way that was the finished product, and I thought it was going to be a decoy to throw off people like me so I could report it to people like you, and they could find leaks, or they could just change it up at the last second, and people would be excited, but that wasn't the case. The title belt just wasn't finished. Randy Rhodes started the AEW Heels group, which is to help promote women within wrestling, and there's talk of having an AEW Heels section at some shows, I'm told. So be on the lookout for that. I'm told that those meetings are for female fans are planned to be a regular thing. Friday had a Q&A and a poll section, and I heard a lot of positive things about it, so here's to keeping that going. I spoke with a ticketing CEO specialist who says that the world initially will be gun-shy about attending events, at least in his mind. I wanted to speak to somebody like this because we had a lot of people saying, oh, what do you think about the future of events? What do you think the attendance will be like? How do you feel like that'll work? Well, I can tell you that TicketSocket is seeing events like Spartan Race and activity-based companies still do well because they're anticipating getting out after all this. Ticketing companies had to hold on and put clauses to not pay out clients because of the risk of chargebacks and refunds. There are possibilities that promoters wouldn't want to refund ticket holders, and the ticket companies would have been left holding the bag in that regard. There are other ticketing companies, like TicketSocket, who give promoters access to their own funds, which allows for refunds, deferments, postponements, and the like. I'm going to publish that interview for Fightful Select. It's going to be an audio interview that I did a couple weeks ago, this week probably, and let you all get a full listen at that and what TicketSocket has to say about the situation and really what you guys can expect, at least based on their experiences. Well, if you experienced WWE 2K20 last year, you experienced a really shitty video game. But Virtual Basement's got one coming out. They started to work on it a little bit earlier this year. There's a lot of wrestlers involved in it, and I've got a major feature dropping this week. Now, you all probably saw the notes that I put on Fightful Select a few days ago, but I have a full video, I have an interview, I got a lot of cool information coming up on that. Virtual Basement told me that they considered their upcoming video game a passion project. They're hoping to self-fund the project and hope to launch it with early access over time, and they want to create an alternative that also opens up some opportunity. They have signed a lot of wrestlers up, and they're working with them as opposed to working with individual companies, and haven't had any conversation with particular companies in general. They want to add on wrestlers from the past as well. They're open to integrating actual promotions as a part of an add-on content, but as of now, they're working on creating their own fictional brand to utilize in the game, as opposed to partnering up with Ring of Honor or anybody like that. The independent scene will play a role in the game, though. Virtual Basement says that they have handpicked the roster themselves thus far, and reaching out to them has been a team effort. But they did credit Enzo Amore, the former Enzo Amore, I assume that's still what he goes by. But he's been credited big time about recruiting wrestlers and helping connect the Virtual Basement team with other people. He wants Vince Russo to write a storyline for the video game, but I don't know if that will actually happen. I wasn't given any details as to that, but they said that Enzo Amore has been great. And wrestlers that I've talked to have said that tattoos are going to be added eventually, but they weren't upon the first models that were being sent in. And basically, they sent in their pictures, and these people are being created from scratch. As for gameplay, I'm told that it's a mix of No Mercy, Here Comes the Pain, Day of Reckoning 2, and SmackDown vs. Raw 2011, and that they're going above and beyond to create a strong foundation that is immediately fun, but can also be built on as they continue to work on the game. And they're building a core first, then developing the individual aspects of the game. There's still some important aspects of the motion capture that they have to figure out. They mentioned to me that some, like taunts, can be motion capture. But for some moves, they might want the attention to detail that only hand animations can achieve for them, so that they're thinking about going that route. Again, I have a major feature on this, not to plug you guys behind the paywall, but I have a major feature coming up on this week. It'll be up early access for you guys on Tuesday, so I hope you guys like it, and I hope you guys check it out. Another big feature I'm very excited for, Rob Van Dam making a finisher. You guys probably know, if you've been around here any extended period of time, how much I care about the Making a Finisher series. I think it's awesome. I think it's one of our signatures. And I got to talk to him about the Van Terminator. So we have seen the first ever Van Damminator done on Scotty Anton. It's a pretty famous spot in ECW history. Rob Van Dam had hyped it up, but he actually practiced it with Amish Roadkill way before he debuted the move. He said it was an extension of the Van Damminator and walked us through coming up with that, saying that he had come up with the Van Damminator in anticipation of working in front of a more hardcore crowd. When he started to be able to do it from across the ring, he decided that he could just go coast to coast with the move. Now, he admitted that moving to WWF was a big adjustment for him, not just because of the ring size, but because of the ropes as well. They switched from cable and ECW to actual rope in WWE, and he said that he had some issues making the move and that he was too cocky and anticipated that he wouldn't have any trouble with it, but thinks that if he didn't push the chair with his feet, he probably wouldn't have even connected with the move early in WWF. But let's go back. Let's go back to the Scotty Anton Van Terminator. Because I actually spoke to Scotty Anton about this. He said that they actually practiced the move a couple of weeks before in Kansas City, and he knew right away that he was busted up really badly. He would be sitting there in the corner, and Bill Alfonso would have the chair in front of his face, and Bill Alfonso would keep him updated, like, here he comes, here he comes, here he comes. And would keep him abreast of where Van Dam was in the air when he was shielding him, and that Steve Corino and Jack Victory had to come out and cause a distraction that allowed Anton to get to the back because he was busted up. He couldn't do anything. Later on, he figured out a way to shield his face with his arm that might avoid another broken nose, and he said that he was happier to get a broken arm than a broken nose, and said that he really thought that the move was pretty safe, all things considered, and he was just happy to be a part of the intro of it. I loved taking this stroll down memory lane with Rob Van Dam. He seemed really happy to do that. I did this in conjunction with an interview I did with him in Impact, and it seemed like he hadn't talked about that in a while because it was bringing back a lot of old memories. And to me, when you can get a guy like Rob Van Dam who hasn't talked about something like this ever or in a long time, I think that's pretty cool, and I think you guys are really going to like this. Rob Van Dam, his story drops on Friday, and it is an awesome one. That wraps up ECW month here on Fightful, but we do have the retro review dropping this week as well. Rob Van Dam versus Jerry Lynn, well worth you checking out. Let's get to contract updates. Rachel Ellering was revealed to be a part of the WWE releases last month. She'll have a few places to go. The market will be booming, I imagine, after all this is done. And by that, I mean the free agent market. There'll be a lot of people hiring, looking for people to bring in, although everybody will be fresh, so who knows. Ric Flair claims that he has signed a new deal with WWE. So good for him. He gets to do some more appearances, all that. Brian Cage has been signed since about January, according to Tony Khan. This deal was put together after he left Impact Wrestling, and apparently while he still had his torn bicep. Tony Khan said that they always knew he was going to be back in May, so the SoCal Uncensored report was correct, and Brian Cage was signed right after he left Impact Wrestling. And he's a big addition to AEW's roster, so he'll be there for quite a while. MLW re-signed a couple of very important names. Both Richard Holiday and Alex Hammerstone of the Dynasty, they both signed multi-year agreements. I didn't see the word contract used in the language there, but signed multi-year agreements, and that's big time, man. They put a lot of stock in Alex Hammerstone as middleweight champion. Richard Holiday is an emerging star. I mean, he's already there for them. He's a really good name for them to re-sign, as is Hammerstone. You got to have guys like that. Those are a good foundation to help build your roster around. So, good for MLW. Injury news. Brian Cage, as we mentioned, returned to action after a torn bicep. Britt Baker suffered a leg injury on the May 20th Dynamite, and she was pulled from AEW Double or Nothing, and she was replaced by Penelope Ford. Phoenix suffered an injury on the May 20th Dynamite, was pulled from the Casino ladder match. Very unfortunate. A lot of people got banged up there. Matt Jackson was among those. He broke a rib on the May 20th AEW Dynamite. However, he was still able to do the Stadium Stampede match. Unbelievable. Here's to hoping that all three of those people get better soon. This was a rough, rough week in general for pro wrestling, but it was a rough, rough week as far as injuries go for AEW. Let's hit you guys with some stats. Note that these do not include AEW Double or Nothing. I will likely do a piece on them on their own. Ruby Riott still hasn't won a singles match since her return, which leaves her at 0-8 since coming back ahead of Elimination Chamber in March. She has not won a televised match since April 2019. Charlotte Flair has beaten Liv Morgan, Ruby Riott, Mia Yim, and Caden Carter, and successfully defended her title against Io Shirai since WrestleMania. Rob Gronkowski has become the longest reigning WWE 24/7 champion of all time and hasn't appeared at WWE since winning the title at Mania. In his last 9 falls, Bobby Lashley has not been pinned or submitted. He's only lost via DQ. Of course, this includes the gauntlet match. MJF still has not lost any one-on-one matches on AEW programming. Karrion Kross moved to 2-0 in his WWE career. On this week's episode of AEW Dynamite, Matt Hardy picked up his first televised singles win in over 2 years. His last was winning the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal in 2018 at WrestleMania. Sammy Guevara is 4-0 in one-on-one matches on AEW Dark, but is 3-9 in Dynamite and pay-per-view singles matches. Sammy has appeared on televised programs for AAA, MLW, Impact, GFW, Lucha Underground, and AEW over the past 4 years. Bayley competed in a one-on-one match on SmackDown for the first time since February. She had competed in 4 tag team matches during that time. Hana Kimura, may she rest in peace, was the only woman to compete at last year's sold-out New Japan Ring of Honor G1 Supercard in Madison Square Garden and at New Japan's Tokyo Dome Wrestle Kingdom this year. She will be missed. Also, Shad Gaspard will be missed. His last WWE contracted match was a win over Roman Reigns in FCW. And since leaving WWE, Crime Time had competed against teams including Marty Scurll and Joe Hendry, the Headbangers, the LAX combo of Hernandez and Homicide, the Hart Foundation combination of Teddy Hart and Harry Smith, as well as the War Kings, Jax Dane and Crimson. Of course, Shad Gaspard, he will be missed as well. We hope you guys are feeling okay after this rough week. Thank you for joining us. We've got a lot of cool stuff coming for you in this last week of May. A lot. I'm going to post that ticketing interview for all subscribers. We've got Making a Finisher dropping. I got a lot of scoops coming up. Oh, I'm working on putting the final touches on a lot of stuff. Thank you, guys. We're out.